Well, compared to most New Yorkers, I get up very early. I get up around 6 every day. I wake up, I do a sort of a 45-minute to an hour-long meditation and sort of workout session. Well, I'm a big believer in meditation in general, you know, and mindfulness as a discipline. I believe that if most people meditated in the world, we'd have a much better world, because it gives you a much better understanding of your own emotions and what worries you, what's important to you. And so I've been doing martial arts since I was 11, and so the discipline that I practice is a martial art. It's a form of which incorporates a lot of qigong, which is a meditation technique in Chinese martial arts and medicine. It's huge. It really like changes the way that you perceive your day. And I find when I sort of go into periods of getting really busy and like don't do that, I get, you know, I just tend to get more anxious, more stressed out. You know, I do other things to deal with my stress, such as like smoke or drink more, and those things tend to just kind of actually have a negative sort of feedback loop. And so like meditation, I found, is really one of the best. But it's, I meditate in the morning. It teaches your body to move in a certain way. And it's both still and moving. And then I incorporate that with some more exercise that is more physically intensive. So I also practice capoeira and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And then in the end of my day, around 5:30, 4:30, I will go to a jiu-jitsu class. And then that sort of ends up clearing out the sort of stress from the day. And it also makes me more awake. So my name is Anders. My new title is the managing director of Aiko, and we're creating a fitness companion, essentially a super Tamagotchi. At age 10, I don't think I had any idea what I really wanted to become. You know, I think as I entered into high school, I really became fascinated by the idea of becoming a lawyer. And it wasn't the money or that part of it. It was really the idea of like creating positive impact and justice. And I loved watching these movies where like the lawyer was a good guy and they kind of changed people's life by going after a corporation or freeing somebody from prison. So I'm from Finland originally, but my family moved to Hawaii when I was 11, which was a very, very big move. My middle school and high school was spent on the Big Island of Hawaii, and that's where I first began to sort of study martial arts. Before that, I was kind of the typical Finnish kid, and we played hockey, soccer during the summer. Finland's a very sports-oriented country, so essentially we would just kind of switch. Summertime, like, we'd do the summer sports, track and field, soccer, and then wintertime we would switch to cross-country skiing and ice hockey. And then I moved to Finland, and then it was like none of that. I tried to like play soccer, and it was just... It was just so hot and humid compared to what I was used to that I found it really difficult, you know. And I'd also started studying karate at the same time, and like I was balancing the two, and I just found it too much. And then I decided to go into martial arts rather than soccer. And then that's where my sort of team sports ended, and I became like a solo practitioner. So then I decided to attend the University of Washington in Seattle. A lot of Hawaii kids end up there. I think it's because on the West Coast. And like the school has a really good reputation. I'd also applied to Pepperdine in California.
Did you know what you wanted to study? Or?
I knew that I wanted to essentially study like a pre-law discipline. And there's, you know, most schools don't have pre-law, so you can choose to be an English major or history. I chose to do history because I'd already realized in undergraduate or in high school that I wanted to really like stories. Like I was an avid reader. I'm like, you know, I read The Lord of the Rings when I was 11, like the whole set, you know, like I was a very advanced reader, and it was one of the things that I did a lot in Hawaii as a kid. So went to Seattle, started, and I loved college. I was just like, this is amazing. Like high school was just really intellectually uninteresting. You know, it was just like, I went to a good high school, but I found most of the classes really unstimulating. So then to be in a college where, shit, I can make up my own schedule, come and go as I want, and like study stuff that's really fascinating and really hard. So my first semester I had a class, and I also like I kind of ended up registering so late that there was like essentially sat down with the counselor at the school, and she's like, she kind of gave me a sheet. This is kind of basically what's available. Like, what are you interested in? And there's like one page, you know, versus like the huge college catalog. And history, I was like, oh, well, there's actually a bunch of, you know, there's some stuff here. But because I was, you know, had waited so late, there was no like kind of first year level or intro classes. So my first semester of college, I had a 400 level in history, which was like Russian civilization. I had like a 300 level of like, you know, modern European history. And it's like, oh, you should, you know, like, do you want to take a language? And I was like, yeah, it's like I've been studying French for 4 years, haven't really learned it yet. So I want to do something really different. I'm trying to choose between Chinese or Japanese. And I chose Chinese because one of my best friends in high school was from Taiwan. You know, this is like the early 90s, so like China wasn't really on people's radar yet. As a, like Japan was still the country that everybody was just thinking about. And so like, let me study Chinese. Like everybody is studying Japanese. So let me do that. And so then that was like my first semester, and it was hard, you know. And it was, but it was fun, you know, because it was just like. But I think right from there on, like I had a pretty monkish lifestyle. Like I would study literally Chinese for 2 hours each day, one in the morning, one in the evening, and then. Like I made sure that I always had about like 4 hours of like 1 hour of study time per class for each class that I took every day. So then like in addition to going to classes, I would, you know, so I essentially had like an 8 hour work day just to study. And then I would balance that out with exercise. I do. I mean, I guess what a lot of people did, it's like, 1 year I took, just kind of had a shitty campus job, like, working with the dorms, kind of like, as people that would kind of clean, like, the University of Washington, like, run a lot of conferences and stuff like that, so, and they would rent out the rooms to people that came to the conferences, so we would kind of a little bit like working at a hotel. You clean the rooms, you made beds, all that stuff. So that was one summer. Yeah, I did internships and stuff like that. So one, I worked at like the Washington State's like Attorney General's office, kind of consumer protection, just, you know, like just to kind of, you know, because I thought I wanted to go into law, you know, so I took one of those. I worked at Washington State's kind of China Business Council as well. Like, I did an internship there. I worked at, you know, then I worked at the library, which was like this kind of full, you know, so I had a mix of internships and then like kind of paying jobs. I tried to always have like a, I think most years I tended to have like a part-time job, you know, nothing like crazy, like kind of maybe like 10 hours a week or, you know, something just to keep burning some amount of money. Then my third year, I went to study abroad in China for a year. That was amazing. You know, this was in 95, 96. So this is like, China was literally kind of the Wild West back then. And this was my first real experience traveling my own, like, internationally. That was great. It's like, there's so much that you learn from studying abroad. One, I came back from that and I could speak Mandarin, you know, because I'd already been studying it for 2 years before going in, and then after going there, like, I spoke Mandarin. It was a 5-year project, all in all. Like, I learned that, I think, I begin to notice that I was more interested in hanging out with the people that did creative stuff. So I had a number of people on my study abroad programs that were from art programs, like photographers or printmakers, and I kind of had more in common with them, and it was interesting too, because I kind of saw the difference between the people like from the Ivy League schools and like a pretty good university, like University of Washington. I realized that they weren't really like smarter. They were exposed to more interesting things, and so access is a really big thing. And so I think that was one of the things that I've noticed, is like sometimes you see like people from other institutions and companies and you're really awed by them, and it's not, in general, like I found that when I would meet people, like that I would have, you know, same level of intelligence, but they might have more knowledge about the world than I had, or interesting things that I had.
So what would you tell someone like 21? Junior in college?
Travel all that you can, because it really, like, it's one of those things that it's one, your view won't be as narrow, because it's one of the problems of living in the States, is that people have a very narrow worldview, because you live in a really huge country that is, you know, where most of your neighbors are not as powerful as you. So if you live in the U.S. you think that the U.S. is the center, and that's kind of normal. Like, people that live in a big country, I've noticed that the same thing happens if you live in China or you live in India, like where it's like it's the big country versus smaller country. So it's really good to kind of go to other parts of the world, and I think it's even better to go to countries that are very different from yours. And so, like, a lot of American kids go and study abroad in Europe, and I think that's it's pretty good, but it won't be as different, because the societies are still like kind of similar enough. So better go to Brazil or India, Russia, like something that is like, well, China, the sort of system of thought is completely different. You also find like whole new opportunity areas that you never thought of, and you'll see like new areas coming up, and that's really important. Baby, 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 I'm coming home to your tender sweet loving, you're my one and only one. I don't see the market as like U.S. only. You know, I really think the more that I've just essentially, like, those were just, China was just my first thing. After that, I came back to the States, did another year, and then I went to Japan for a year, learned Japanese. Then I came back to Seattle, stayed there and that's kind of where I discovered design. Like, it was right at the sort of the height of the first boom, and it was just became clear to me from one of the internships that I had, tech was just was going to be huge, like especially like internet and consumer technology. So then I just kind of began to realize that I was actually like had a very good sort of sensibility for visual design, just kind of playing around with stuff in one of the computer labs. And so then I just began to make stuff on my own, taught myself Flash and Photoshop, and then I just began to freelance. And I didn't charge people to begin with because I knew that I didn't know what I was doing, so I was just trying to get experience. And so that's what I would do. Then I moved to New York. One of my friends had moved here. He was kind of learning the same way that I was learning, and he got in a job at a multimedia design firm in New Jersey, and got me a job there too. And that was like my first official design job. Because I took my time. So yeah, like I actually spent 6 years or 5.5 years in undergraduate, because I did 2 years abroad, and it was completely worth it, because when I went to Japan, that whole year was paid for. Like the program was like, they flew me there, they flew me back. There was a monthly stipend, so it was kind of an amazing program, and I learned Japanese from that. Earlier in my career, I really used to look up to designers more, you know, so like John Maeda, and like he was one of the people that I first discovered his design, and that's kind of when I knew that, I want to be a designer. This was like pre-RISD. This is when he was still at the Media Lab and did his own artwork. The stuff at the Media Lab, like, just really, like, fascinated me, and that's how I ended up going to ITP. Like, I knew that I wanted to kind of do a combination of design and technology and programming. So earlier in my career, I really looked up to designers a lot, and now I still do. You know, there's still people that I think are really amazing. You know, like I like a number of designers at Muji, Kenya Hara, Naoto Fukusawa is a really amazing industrial designer. But then I also look up to people within, more and more that I track, who are founders and CEOs. So Elon Musk is definitely somebody that I like. I think because it's not about being rich. It's about, or making money, or even like having the biggest company. He's really looking at creating impact. You know, and I think that's really admirable. And it's the thing that I liked about Steve Jobs too. It's like he was looking to create impact. You know, and Steve Jobs is definitely one of my favorites, just because he's such he really fundamentally changed the world through his company and his products. I do like Jonathan Ive a lot. You know, I like his sort of sense of the whole idea of that when you make something, it's about how much care that you put into it. I think that's a really important concept. Like that I keep saying that in the Apple videos, to the point that it becomes a little cheesy, but it's like we put a lot of care into like our production. And I think that's an important concept, is that your product is essentially like a incarnation of your company's culture. And like, and how you think and how you view the world. There was a new book about Steve Jobs that was really good, that was written, it wasn't the Isaacson biography, it was another one that just came out. I think it was called like Becoming Steve Jobs, and it was about how important Pixar was to making him a better leader. So I thought that was a really great book, and the point of that book was that, yes, Steve Jobs was kind of his first, you know, he was very immature when he created Apple, and that's also why he got kicked out. And then, like, but it doesn't explain his comeback, you know, like, how did, and it's not just about him being a genius, but that he became increasingly a much better manager of people. And that's, and he was really true working with Pixar, and he was, you know, he didn't have a very sort of low level interference with what Pixar did. Like, it was more like the overall sales and strategy and marketing, and Pixar itself was kind of managed by the Pixar CEO and Lasseter, and so I think, and he essentially learned from that how kind of slow, you know, like, the sort of creation process could be, and like that you needed to give enough time, and that it was a lot of good things. So I thought that was a really interesting book. Next book I want to read is White. It's by Kenya Hara, where he talks about white as a concept in Japanese society, and the idea of, like, importance of emptiness and, like, removing stuff. And I feel like that's very topical with today's society, which is really noisy, and we're constantly being distracted. And so, like, the idea of removing and simplifying your existence, I think, is really important, so that you can really focus on what's essential and what's important.